Hey, it's Friday, which means Bill O'Reilly, and he says some surprising and shocking things about our country and the ability to trust our Justice Department. Also, we have two other things that are really quite amazing. We have sections of the podcast that comes out this weekend of Jordan Peterson, framed a little differently, so it's worth listening to the beginning of the podcast and hearing Jordan Peterson, and then later going to listen to the full interview. But also, we have two guests on today that you really need to hear. One is a mom that used to be a teacher. She went back and she got recertified, and then she decided, you know what, that's not enough. I need to be on the school board. She and four others like her are running for election in Portland, Oregon, and their stance is against critical race theory. Extraordinarily brave. What she's up against with Antifa alone would be enough to sell most people, you know, now I'm going to sit on the couch. I'm not going to say anything. Really brave person. Then the other on the podcast today is a woman who has just started Black Mothers Voices United. And it is not anti-police. It is not talking about the police crime alone. It is talking about the numbers of children that are dead in these at-risk communities. Black moms coming out who lost their children and saying, we're so screwed up. Stop this. We need the police. And here's how we can solve it together. It's a Don't Miss podcast. Here it is.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Every day it's becoming easier and easier for me to show you examples of people standing up and doing the right thing and people with great courage. I'm not sure I have talked to somebody who has as much courage as Jeanette Shada. Jeanette is living in Beaverton, Oregon, you know, the Portland area. And she is running for school board and fighting against critical race theory in the schools. When you have Antifa threatening to kill your mayor, wow, the last place I want to be is in the center of that and in politics. She is running now for the Beaverton School Board. She's a candidate with the platform of anti-critical race theory. She was a high school English teacher at a charter school, 95% minority students. She is certified to teach English as a second language as well. She tutors students. She has worked as a teacher's assistant, a group home, foster youth, substitute, K through 12 school, blah, 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 blah. She's an accomplished teacher. She joins us now. Welcome, Jeanette.
Hi, Glenn. Thank you for having me on your show.
Why? What has given you the courage to be able to do this?
Well, it started out with the school district not properly working with my son, who has a 504 plan and some mental health issues. And so I pulled him out of the Beaverton schools 1 week before Governor Brown put the shutdown on everybody because of COVID. And it was just to get his grades up. We moved from Texas just a few months prior to that. And he went from a straight A student to an F student and skipping school regularly because he didn't feel like he belonged and they weren't servicing his 504, and which is against the law. So as time went on, of course, we're on lockdowns. He wants to go back to a campus, and I can't let him go back to a campus because schools are shut down. So along came December, and this opportunity came up. I was actually thinking of going back in the classroom because I did renew my teaching credential here in Oregon. I originally got my credential in Oregon many years ago, and I decided to run. I prayed about it, and this is the direction that I'm supposed to go. And then when we were deciding on my platform, I knew about critical race theory. I knew about comprehensive sexuality education. And I decided to run against them. I knew it was going to cause controversy, but wow, I did not know Antifa was going to start going after me. There's one person in Antifa who went on my Facebook page. I received a $1,000 donation from a gentleman named Ben Edel with Free Oregon. And they started blaming me, taking money from Proud Boys. And Ben has nothing to do with the Proud Boys. He is a very upstanding citizen who lost his business in downtown Portland due to Antifa riots and due to the shutdown of Governor Brown that is still occurring to this day. People don't understand. We're still shut down in Oregon, big time. And so Antifa started coming after me, and that just put the firestorm. And that was about 2 weeks ago. But, you know, when you have bullies threatening you, calling you all hours of the night, leaving nasty messages all over your Facebook page, what do? You stand up to them. And that's what I taught my students. For 23 years I've been in education. You stand up to your bullies and you face them down and you say, no, you're not going to silence me. I am a human being. I deserve to have my voice heard just like you do. And if you don't like my platform, then that's okay. But we cannot have critical race theory in our schools. It is teaching racism. They're trying to get rid of racism with racism. That makes absolutely no sense to me. So that's why I decided to run. And it was going really well until 2 weeks ago. And then the teachers union started coming after me with some teachers who are staunch teachers union advocates. And then one of the teachers there got a hold of one of her Antifa friends. And that's where the firestorm started. So now they steal my yard signs. They call me all these nasty names. And I'm standing strong. I'm standing against them, and people are tired. I'm out talking to people, either on the phone, through email, face-to-face at the door, and people want change. They do not want critical race theories in the classroom. I had one young lady 2 days ago tell me she has a 1- and 4-year-old, and she wants her kids to be safe in school. She wants them to learn correct history. She wants them to be little kids, you know, learning the basics of reading, writing, arithmetic, art, music. And that's what schools are meant to be, educational facilities and not ideological camps where propaganda is pushed. And I've been in education long enough to know that what we're currently having is not okay. It was in the colleges. And now we have a whole generation of teachers who are indoctrinated in this. And so they brought it down to the K-12 system, and we have to stand up and fight. We cannot be silent anymore, or our whole country is going to be in peril.
We're talking to Jeanette Shada. She is running for school board up in the in Beaverton, up in the Portland area. Jeanette, first of all, is your family safe?
I believe so. We have to be extra vigilant, of course, because Antifa has made some veiled threats, both through Facebook and through phone calls. I have called the police, but they basically said unless something happens, there's nothing they can do, which is very interesting. I support the police 100%, but it's unfortunate with how volatile Antifa is, and you just don't know what's going to happen. I'm not scared for my safety. I still go out. I still block walk. I still do sine waves. Just Wednesday, I was doing sine waves on a busy intersection in Beaverton. And the same person who put out the information to start this firestorm put out another post saying, oh, Jeanette Shada is standing on this corner. Go to her. So about 5 Black Lives Matter people showed up. But we stood there anyway, and I actually talked with them. One was a 13-year-old girl, and, you know, she's been indoctrinated in this stuff, and it's unfortunate. They wanted to yell at me after, we actually had a pretty decent conversation until I told them that they really need to learn the true history of the United States. And then they started yelling at me about how this country is built on the backs of slaves and things like that. And I said, well, that's your opinion. And I stood there. Our event was 4:30 to 6:30. They showed up about 6 o'clock, and we stayed till 6:30 because I'm not going to back down. I'm not going to run away. There are people.
Before we go any further, Good for you. Before we go any further, I want to make sure we get to this. Do you have enough volunteers? I don't even know how many listeners we have in the Beaverton area, but do you have enough volunteers? Are you looking for donations? How can this audience help you?
Yeah, if you go to buildbackbasics.com, you can donate there. I am always looking for volunteers. I have a great volunteer team right now, and we have been pushing hard ever since February, and we're still pushing hard. I received 15 new volunteer submissions over the last week, and I do talk to every single one of them to make sure, you know, their heart is in it, and because it takes courage to stand and do this, even when I've been in the local news and they've seen the nastiness on Facebook from people. Some of these people are teachers that are teaching your children. You know, they're making these vile, nasty comments. And I'm just like, come on, people, this is America. You know, if you don't like my platform, then go to the ballot box and vote, but you don't need the vitriol here. But buildbackbasics.com is where people can go to learn more. And I do answer my phone. I let it go to voicemail a lot because I don't know the phone numbers, but I will call back. Mm-hmm. And people are surprised that it's me and not somebody else because I don't have a campaign manager. I'm managing my campaign. I have a very good media team that I hired who's handling the social media side. But other than that, it's a few people that are backing me.
I don't know if you have followed what happened in Southlake, Texas, but there's a national story about it again today. In Southlake, Texas, we had the same exact thing, and the city was kind of asleep and just didn't think that critical race theory was a big deal. And then they started some parents were called racist for bringing up, wait a minute, what are we teaching here? And the election, because of the strong pushback, the election went in favor of those who were questioning and wanted critical race theory out. There were three board members that were voted in new on your platform, and they won 70-30. I thought that was pretty amazing. That was a county that voted for Joe Biden, by the way.
Yeah, and I've been following that story, and that goes to show the silent majority. They are tired of this. Like I said, I'm out there campaigning every day and talking with people, and so are my volunteers, and the stories that come in, people are so tired of this. They're afraid for their children to be indoctrinated with this false narrative of if you're born white that you are inherently racist, and if you are born of a brown or black skin that you are a victim of the system. No, I taught kids of all races, all nationalities, all languages. And what I taught them is they are excellent human beings and have every opportunity in the world to pull themselves up. I had one gentleman named Pierre when I worked in Texas at the Alterna campus. He was in a gang life. He was half black, half white. And he came to me with tears down his face, not knowing what to do. He has a two-year-old, well, at the time, he had a two-year-old little girl. And I helped him find the opportunity to pull out, to make sure that he had a better life than what his parents gave him, because his parents were gangs and drug dealers, and he didn't want that for himself. These kids are crying out. They want supportive adults there for them. And in America, underneath the Constitution of the United States, it's equality for all. That means we all have the opportunity to grasp onto something positive and make things of it. Yes, this country had slavery. Yes, we had racism. But you know what? The civil rights movement, well, the Civil War, you know, we pulled out of slavery there. And even before then, the founding fathers didn't want slavery here. They tried to get rid of it in the Articles of Confederation. And then the civil rights movement with Martin Luther King Jr. Judge a person by the content of the character, not an immutable quality like skin color, a God-given gift that we all have. And now critical race theory is making a U-turn and going pre-civil rights and reinstitutionalizing racism, doing the exact opposite of what they're claiming it's meant to do.
Jeanette, you give me great hope, and I hope there are more teachers out there and more parents out there like you that are willing to do the tough thing, you are in really a dangerous situation, and we will keep you in our prayers. I would ask everybody who prays in this audience to put Jeanette on her, on your prayer list. I congratulate you. Your election is coming up, I think, in what, next week or the week after?
Yeah, May 18th is the last day by 8 o'clock. But that doesn't end there. When myself, Sarah Lynn, and FUA get on the school board, because we're running together on the same platform, when we get onto the school board, that's when the real work begins, because we have to undo a lot of what the superintendent Rodding and this current school board has done. And we need to get schools back to being educational facilities and not indoctrination camps that they're becoming. And everybody needs to stand up and have a voice in that.
I am so glad to know you. We will call you the day after the election and hopefully have you on the show as a victor. Congratulations and thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart, from even my family. I know they're not going to be affected directly with what you're doing, but my family will be directed by your courage of standing, and I thank you so much for that, Jeanette.
I appreciate it.
That is Jeanette Shada. You can find her at her website, buildbackbasics.com.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Spring is finally here. I know, Minnesota, keep it down. We know, not until August for you. But for the rest of the country, spring is starting to come. And I don't know about you, but I love to grill outdoors. It's so easy now because of Rec-Tech. There's something about being outdoors in the spring that goes well with a Rec-Tech. Imagine that big, juicy steak or that delicious hamburger, maybe a big old slab of ribs slathered in barbecue sauce that's slowly smoking to absolute perfection. Oh my gosh, my mouth is watering. Rec-Tech does it all. Smoking, grilling, baking. I have one made of stainless steel. It's built like a tank. It has smart grill technology, which means I don't burn anything anymore. And every time you can control the whole process from an app on your phone or your device, you're going to love Rec-Tech. Follow Rec-Tech on all social media, sign up for their newsletter, and then go to rectech.com. RECTEQ.com. You won't believe the difference. Bill O'Reilly, so why does the mob love Joe Biden?
Okay, so killing the mob is a history of organized crime, and we take you right up to the present moment. So 100 days ago, when Joe Biden came in, the first thing he did was knock out all the border protections that Donald Trump had installed. It took Trump 3 years to get the border under control. He finally did, all right? In a day, Biden knocked out all the border protections, stopped the building of the wall, and basically stopped people from being confined to Mexico. They could come across. In that time, 400,000 migrants have arrived in the United States illegally. Now, some of those want asylum, but it's 400,000. Just picture that. From Brownsville to San Diego, 400,000 foreign nationals are here in 100 days. What that did was it diverted all of the Border Patrol's attention and every other federal agency on the border to care for those people, to feed them, to shelter them, to process them. So what then was that was lacking? Drug interdiction. That was left to the side because all of the people in charge of the drug interdiction had to be used to help the migrants. Are you with me so far?
Yep.
The result of that. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think you could go a step further. Not only
is nobody
paying attention. Oh, okay, go ahead.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
So all of the resources that were used under the Trump administration to stop narcotics from coming to the United States were gone. The result was a flood of fentanyl, heroin, methamphetamine, and cocaine into this country. Who controls the distribution of those drugs to the areas of the countries? The mafia still controls all of it. the deal organized crime, American organized crime, has with the Mexican cartels is you make it, you ship it, but you don't come here. See, there are no Mexican cartels here in the United States because the American mobsters will not permit it. The American mobsters never see the drugs. They franchise the drugs out to drug gangs. These are the people murdering children in Chicago, New York, L.A., and every other big city. Okay? They are the ones that retail the drugs to the addicts on the street. The mafia doesn't see that, but the mafia controls that. They allow the drug gangs to operate. And the drug gangs then pay them an enormous amount of money for the privilege of selling drugs in Harlem or in Bed-Stuy or in Compton, California. That's how it works. So today, there's more drugs in the USA than at any other time in history, and the mafia chieftains love Biden because Biden has an open border policy. There you go.
Let me ask you this. First of all, there's also the benefit directly to the cartels, not necessarily the U.S. mob, but the cartels, because they're making about $14 million a day on human trafficking across the border. So there's another boom industry for them.
The human trafficking is chump change compared to what they make importing hard drugs into this country.
Right.
Hard drugs is a $1 billion industry. All of our social problems, right? The opioid crisis, organized crime. Homelessness, organized crime. Who do you think these homeless people are? They're drug addicts. They can't work. They can't pay a mortgage. They have to sit out there. And they want to sit out there, many of them, and get high all day long. You say, how about some rehab? They look at you like, you know, come on. Not all of them. Some of them want to improve, but a lot of them don't. Well, that's all drug-related. Violent crime, through the roof, murders. You report it, I report it. What is that? Who's doing that? The drug gangs are doing it. It's not Bonnie and Clyde walking out of their house machine-gunning people down. It's drug gangs in the poor neighborhood.
Why were we willing to look at the mobsters in the 1930s? And not willing to look at the drug gangs today?
Because there's a race component today. So I did a search on BillO'Reilly.com. As you know, we do the No Spin News every night. I told my crack staff, find me one article, one, that explains the massive amount of narcotics that are being shipped into the United States since Joe Biden is president. Not one. No local reporting, no national reporting, nothing. I'm the guy that's reporting it. I'm the guy. Now, you ask a very good question, Beck. Why did organized crime get all the headlines in the past, but now we don't hear anything about it? Because the organized crime industry is narcotics. They do a little sports betting. They do a little prostitution. They own the porn industry. Yeah, but that's not what they really do. And the narcotics are centered in the inner cities. So there's a racial component there. The murders in Chicago are 90% African-American.
Right.
That's why nothing's done. Nothing's discussed. They don't want it. They won't do it. It's too explosive for the press to cover it. And the politicians, forget it. Forget it. I mean, they have no clue. They don't care. And it's just business as usual.
And so I want to
go ahead.
I want to ask you, I have to take another break, but when we come back, I want to talk to you about the labor unions and what Biden is doing with the labor unions. I mean, I've never seen anything like, I don't even know if FDR did as much for the labor unions as Joe Biden is. And historically, the labor unions have been run by the mob. Are they still, and what does that mean? More with Bill O'Reilly coming up in just a second. By the way, his new book is called Killing the Mob. It's a fantastic history book. You'll love it. Bill O'Reilly, Killing the Mob. It's available wherever you buy books today. Let me take you to the mob in the labor unions, and we have now this push for labor unions, unlike I've seen at any time in my life. I remember in the 70s when labor unions were being pushed, but it there was an outcry for some of those labor unions back then by regular people, or so it seemed to me. You know, I was younger, and so it seemed to me, just watching things, that there was some call for labor unions because it was out of balance. Right now, Americans do not want labor unions, and we are being smothered by very powerful labor unions like the teachers union. Connections to the mob?
Some unions in the United States of Trump. I have a big chapter on how President Trump, when he was a businessman in New York, had to deal with the concrete union that put up his buildings, and that was a mafia-run operation. And Trump admits it. He says, I had these guys in my office, and I had to negotiate with them because they ran a union. In Killing the Mob, I take you minute by minute through the assassination of Jimmy Hoffa, the Teamsters Union boss, who was mobbed up. But today, some mobs are compromised because of the pension funds, of course. There are billions of dollars in those funds. Pension funds and unions were used to build Las Vegas. That whole city was built on mob pension fund money. The teachers unions in America, very powerful. And what the Biden administration, Democratic Party, is doing is putting together a coalition of union workers, of African Americans, of other minority people, and of white liberals, particularly women. And that coalition gave them power. That defeated Donald Trump, and they want to enhance that coalition, and unions are a part of that. That is why you're seeing all the goodies being given to the unions, and even if the unions hurt the folks, the United States, as the teachers' unions are certainly doing with COVID, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The Democratic Party are going to enhance their power as much as possible.
Bill, there's one story that we covered this week, and I don't think anybody else was covering it, and I highly recommend it to you, especially because of unions and mob connections. But a little-known benefit for the United States Federal Reserve, and I guess for the labor unions in some way or another, is in COVID emergency relief. I was wondering, who is going to bail out the Fed? I mean, you know, everybody's too big to fail. The Fed has $9 trillion now on their balance sheet. How are they going to get rid of that? How are they going to sell all of those bonds when nobody is buying? Apparently, in the COVID relief, the Fed is now allowed to sell to anyone, where they couldn't do that before. So now they can sell to anyone on the open market. Well, guess who is now required, as of 2022, to invest one-third of their pension funds in Treasury bills?
The unions.
What? Cozy little loop. Yeah, total scam.
It's a scam.
Total scam. I mean, because we are now on the hook for the pensions, too.
This is how the federal government works. All right? So whoever has power tries to engineer things behind the scenes to keep power, to get more power. So if the unions are supporting the Democratic Party and there are billions of dollars to be invested, why not invest it in the Democratic Party, which would be the Fed right now, because the Fed has to prop up, or at least try, the Biden administration's economic policies. So this is like always been there, but now it's on steroids because nobody watches. See, the diminishment of the press, the corruption of the corporate media, has led to more and more and more corruption on the part of the federal government because nobody's watching them. They don't watch them. And so they can do what they want to do. I mean, organized crime was able to assemble more power than any other entity in the United States from 1946 to 1962 because there was not one federal agency investigating them. J. Edgar Hoover refused to do it because the mob had stuff on Hoover. So they ran wild. And it's the same thing now with the politicians. If you're a liberal Democrat, no one is going to report on you. And I go back to this horrendous drug border situation that not one reporter has even mentioned. Mm-hmm. So we're living in a corrupt country right now, Beck. The country is corrupt.
I know, unfortunately. And I think that we are losing our FBI. I talked to a former FBI agent just this week off the air, and he said, for the first time in my life, I see what's going on inside the FBI and the Justice Department, and I am afraid there is no justice in the country. That if you are on the wrong side of whoever is now in charge, that they will use the Justice Department and the FBI, and they'll get you if they want.
Yeah, that's
terrifying.
The FBI chief is Merrick Garland. Now, Merrick Garland is a party apparatchik. He always has been. Now, you can make the same charge to William Barr, but Barr really hosed Trump. He did in the end.
He did.
All right.
Yep.
He hosed him. All right. Now, Merrick Garland, he's going to do what the Biden people tell him to do. Not Joe Biden. Again, I'll go back to the president. He doesn't know what's going on. He has no capacity.
This is a machine. Right. Let me switch topics before we run out of time. Sure. The Chinese rocket launcher crashing to Earth. I want to play something from the U.S. military, the same military that came out this week. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs. One of the key strengths of our military is diversity. Our CIA released a recruiting video that was all about being woke and, a cisgender person that has an anxiety disorder, strangely, but I'm now working for the CIA. This is what our military said about this gigantic rocket launcher that is falling to Earth and would be catastrophic if it lands on population. Listen to this.
For both of you, what is the latest estimate of when and where this Chinese rocket will come down? Do you consider it a potential threat to the U.S., and do you have a plan for shooting it down if necessary?
Thanks, David. The latest estimates that I've seen is somewhere between the 8th and 9th, the experts are still working on that. At this point, we don't have a plan to shoot the rocket down. We're hopeful that it will land in a place where it won't harm anyone, hopefully in the ocean or someplace like that.
Now, Bill, I'm hopeful that everything the Chinese military says about coming after the United States, I'm hopeful that that's just fantasy, but I think we should prepare. What does that say about our military and our state of preparedness?
Well, I don't think they can shoot down a stupid rocket anyway, even if they wanted to. But I love the guy's demeanor. I mean, we hope it falls in the ocean or someplace like that. What? I mean, a lake? I mean,
or Australia. Right. Australia. Maybe, right. Someplace like that. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think we're all just going to have to take our chances here, which, of course, increases the anxiety disorder that I have. Forget about the CIA, because it's becoming apparent to me that the Biden administration, they're not hiring the best and brightest. Are you getting that feeling, Beck? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
they're yes. Guys are in charge of, we really don't know where it's going to go, and we hope it goes someplace like the ocean, but maybe a lake would be okay.
All right. Hang on. One last question for you.
Yeah.
Next week, Wednesday,
yes.
New York opens again. The
Yay.
New York Times wrote a story about, it's coming so fast, I don't know what to do, people are panicking, can we still wear our masks, how do we deal with this, what is it going to be like in New York next week?
Well, people are going to still wear the mask, Beck, because most of them are breaking into stores and stealing stuff. So the mask hides their identity, right? We don't have a mask problem here because most of the people are masked up so they can commit crimes. So de Blasio is cleverly, you know, protecting people from COVID by encouraging criminality.
Crime.
You see the brilliance of that?
Yeah. No, it is brilliant. It is brilliant, yeah. Just like a socialist to do that. It really is a mental disorder with many people in California and the Northeast, because they have been indoctrinated on this. It's craziness.
But crazy. Many of them are not good-looking people. So there's a vested interest to wear the mask.
All right. May you wear a mask for the rest of your life. Bill O'Reilly, thank you so much. We will, this a note to the producers, make sure that we have Bill on maybe on Tuesday of next week or whenever he has time to talk about The Mob, because it is a great book and I'm fascinated by the stories, and I think the audience will be too. It is Killing the Mob by Bill O'Reilly, available wherever you buy books now. Thanks, Bill.
Okay, Beck, we'll talk next week. Thank you for being all generous. Right. Appreciate it, Beck.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. And don't forget, rate us on iTunes.
We are back, and we are joined by Sylvia Bennett Stone, the executive director of Voices for Black Mothers United. Sylvia, I know it's painful on this weekend to talk about what got you to where you are, but can you start there?
Yes, absolutely, and thank you for having me on.
You bet.
I can play over and over in my head on July 4th, 2004, when my daughter and her best friend were shot with one bullet, caught in the crossfire of guys shooting at each other. Now, I play this back over in my head because if the police was there, could they have de-escalated and stopped them from shooting or deterred them from shooting? And perhaps if that happened, the girls would be alive today. Now, I just can't imagine communities without the police right now. And yes, I do agree with you in terms of activities that some police officers may do that is outside of what they're sworn to do.
Mm-hmm.
However, we need the police to regulate in our communities. We really do. The number of shootings right now and violent killings is just off the charts.
I have talked to so many African-American parents and grandparents that say they are afraid of some of the youth in their community. And it's a new kind of thing there is this drug culture that has taken over. And if your kids don't get caught up into it, your kids can be killed by it easily. And they need the police. I talked to some people who were marching with Black Lives Matter and didn't believe any of the stuff that Black Lives Matter says politically. But they were, I said, why are you here then? And they said, because we need help. Somebody needs to do something. We need help. So how is your organization, how can we help you? And what is your organization designed to do?
Okay, we have three primary initiatives, and one that is advocacy. We want to help heal those who've been affected by violence. Their children or family member have been killed, and we want to help them heal and get better. But that healing also helps heal their communities. It helps heal their surroundings. When someone see me doing better and me doing positive things in my community, we're hoping that becomes contagious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the healing and the advocacy part of it.
Before we move on, I don't know if you remember, I think it was about the same time you lost your daughter, the Amish shooting where all of those girls were shot. And the healing that happened in that community was phenomenal because of
absolutely
forgiveness and perspective. And I just feel, I mean, I don't want to live like the Amish, but I feel like we'd be a lot better off if we were Amish, you know, and had that attitude.
And if we learn to forgive, you know,
yes,
one of
yes.
the things that I teach our youth in the community is this five self-check. You know, one, know your triggers. Don't go into communities you know you're having issues with someone over there. Those are the type of things that bring and make this escalate into something that someone is going to lose their lives. And it's not even necessary. I can guarantee you those two guys who were shooting and killed our girls probably don't even know what they were shooting over at this point in time. But yeah. yet I'm left with a lifetime of a broken heart because of something that could have been solved or resolved. But yet me, myself, as other thousands and thousands of other mothers, we're left with broken hearts. Could you imagine the mother of a 2-year-old who were sleeping in their crib and a bullet goes through the window and kills that child?
No. No, I can't.
Broken heart.
I mean, I can't. I've thought about this many times with, you know, we've had problems in the family or whatever, and I've thought about, I can't lose this child. I don't know how you even go on, and especially when it's something like your kid being shot in a crib, they weren't involved in anything. It's faith shaking almost.
And you have more and more children, innocent children, that are dying just like that.
So when you said a minute ago, you said if the police could have intervened, maybe my daughter and her friend would be alive. How do you deal with the, like, for instance, the story in Ohio recently where the police did intervene? And I think they did the right thing, but now they're being charged as killers of this young teenager, but they were trying to stop the other teenager from being stabbed. How do you reconcile this?
I personalized it, okay? I've experienced something that was similar. My granddaughter, new high school freshman, some of the girls didn't like her, and they went to her house to jump on her with brass knuckles, sticks, whatever. And thank God her mother was at home. And the mother had to actually get to the point to where she had to intervene with bringing her gun outside, saying, you're not going to hurt my daughter. This is not going to happen. And me myself, as a mother who's had to put a child in a grave, I can't even imagine putting another child in a grave because someone else's actions who cannot to articulate how to defuse a situation, how to get out of a situation, how to walk away from a situation. I will not. So I told her to do whatever you have to do to protect my granddaughter.
Oh, my gosh. Note to the producers, can we please bump the next guest to Monday? I know it's specifically for Friday, but I think it will still work on Monday. And deepest apologies, but I just want to continue our conversation here with Sylvia, because we only got to one of the 3 points of what your organization is doing, and I think it's important that you express it. Can you stay with us for a few more minutes?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. We're talking about the Voices of Black Mothers United initiative, and I don't think that this is an organization that's going to get very much mainstream coverage because it is looking at a different way of dealing with what we're dealing, and they will actually talk about the violence that is happening in their own communities, and it's got to stop. And anyone who has an answer that is based in common sense and common decency, I want to support. I think you feel the same way. You can find out more about it at voicesofblackmothers.com, also woodsoncenter.org. We'll continue our conversation in just a minute. Stand by. This is the Glenn Beck Program. Hello, America. It's Friday, and it's Mother's Day weekend. We have Bob Woodson, founder and president of the Woodson Center, author of a new book coming out, Red, White, and Black, that is, I haven't read it yet, but I'm guessing it's a must read. Sylvia Bennett Stone is also with us. She's the executive director of Voices of Black Mothers United. You can find them at voicesofblackmothersunited.com. Sylvia, I want to talk to you about the three pillars, and I'm going over the website, and the first one is advocacy, and if I'm not mistaken, it's advocacy, family, community intervention, and positive police training. So let's start with advocacy. What does that mean?
Okay, advocacy meaning that we actually go into the community and try to help heal the community. We start with the mothers who've lost children to violence, and then we pour that over into the community where we see the mothers are healing, the community can heal. Long as we hold on to anger and unforgiveness, and that resonates of us, and then resonates outside of our home as well.
We're losing you again. I don't know if you moved to another place.
No,
so you go into the community and mm-hmm. you have volunteers from faith-based organizations, but excuse me for saying, but some faith-based organizations are less faith-based and more political based. But you are talking about people who are really faith-based, and you are bringing peace to the community and to the families.
That's correct. We're talking about the faith base that goes outside of the church walls. We're talking about the faith base who's willing to walk the streets and talk to the drug dealer and talk to the drug user to say, this is not life, this is not living. Because that escalates over into violence every time.
Let me bring Bob in real quick. Bob, do you have any results on going in and meeting with drug dealers and meeting with drug addicts and seeing positive results?
Absolutely. If you go on our website and took Violence Free Zone Milwaukee, where we have our Violence Free Zone efforts, where neighborhood leaders, many of them ex-offenders themselves, through God's grace, they became transformed, and they are witnesses to others that transformation is possible. 6 months ago, the Alliance of Concerned Men, one of our groups in D.C., Glenn, actually went into one of the worst crime areas, and for 3 months, they didn't have a single act of violence. 3 months. Now, that should have been celebrated, but it was reported and ignored. And there are other islands of excellence that have been created by people indigenous who are faith-centered. But also, I want Sylvia to talk about the other initiative where mothers are working with the police at the site of a homicide. And as a consequence of changing the way the police process that, they have dramatically increased the number of closures. So people are encouraged to testify. I wish Sylvia would talk about the role of mothers are playing, actually working with the police at a homicide scene and acting as a liaison with the families. And as a result of building this trust, they have had some dramatic results of closing homicides.
Sylvia, can you talk about that?
Yes. What happens at a homicide scene, you have the family who's just been notified their loved one has been killed. A lot of times their loved one is still lying there on the ground. We partner with Chief Rodney Monroe. He's an ex-police chief who saw the need to change how the homicide scene is processed. And one of the things that he brought to the forefront is that it's very difficult for them as a police officer to assess the homicide scene and hope to get clues to close those homicides and yet deal with a distraught family. We as advocates, we will go in with the police to homicide scenes because we mothers who've lost children know better how to deal with a family that's distraught and has just received news that their child or loved one is deceased and been killed, actually.
I think that is, so, I think that's remarkable. What are the results of that?
Closure. The police are allowed to get clues to help solve that homicide more so than them dealing with a distraught family, and then the clues and the evidence is messed up on the other end. So they deal with their job and we deal with the family in terms of guiding them and calming them and getting them to the point of where they know that the police at that point is not their enemy. And if they know that, then a lot of times the police can get information from the family that helped close the homicide.
So is this part of the second part of the initiative, family and community intervention, or is this promoting positive policing? Because those are the last two.
It is actually a little bit of both, but it's community intervention more so because we are out there, hands-on, boots on the ground with the community. But another part of our community intervention is actually doing work in the community as a prevention measure.
In what way?
We have mothers who's organized as an organization, and what we do is we try to engage police and community in conversation. We just had an event, in fact, in Alabama, where the police came together with mothers who lost children to violence. There was a conversation, so each side listened to one another. And as a result of that, the police sheriff department actually the next day reinstituted sensitivity training of how a police officer should actually deal with the families.
So it is, you're not, mm-hmm. you're approaching the police in a different way to where it's not an adversarial. It is, we have a problem in the community and you may not understand some of this. And so let's work with you because we don't want this to happen, right? Yeah,
that's correct. We are 100% supporting the police. We're saying that, yes, there are some issues among police departments and particular police officers. However, that is not the majority. Majority are good police officers who sworn to protect. So we have to have that conversation where the community break down those barriers and those defenses against police to where they can do what they're sworn to do.
So, Sylvia, if I may, in beginning to understand what's happening, the communities that are under attack where their kids are being killed, that's a lot of parents that are grieving and are probably not the ones to be getting good psychiatric advice or care on a regular basis. And so they're prey to people who would prey upon them for a political agenda or whatever kind of agenda. And when these attacks continue to happen, it's not just that it's one kid being shot like it would be maybe in my neighborhood. It's that that kid has been shot and four other people on my block or in my neighborhood are also grieving, and none of us have been dealt with. Nobody's actually dealing with the problem. And so it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And when you're going and you're looking for blame and everything else, I mean, if you don't have help, you know, exactly. You're prone to all kinds of things. Is this a too simple of an explanation, or am I on the right path at all?
You're on the right path. One of the things that we do in our advocacy department, we actually help people get mental health services. In fact, at our community forums, we bring in a mental health specialist on the spot to where the victims can actually talk with them and understand that it's not a taboo on you if you have to have mental health services. That is part of healing. Right. And if we can continue to encourage that, you have more people getting better.
I would imagine, Sylvia, just because we went through some family therapy, we had a suicide attempt in my family, in my household with my children this last year. And when we went through the therapy with it, he said, "What's your biggest fear?" And I said that it happens and I didn't do something. I didn't know what to do. That somehow or another, I'm responsible. I have to believe that. I mean, you told the story of your granddaughter, you know, a mom who comes out and, you know, thinks, "I don't want to bring a gun," or "I don't want to do this." If you make one mistake, or you even think that you've made a mistake, that's got to weigh you down, and that's not something you deal with quickly. That has got to fester in you for a long time.
It's hard. I mean I just can't even explain how difficult it is. However, it's more difficult putting a child in the ground and saying goodbye. It's more difficult doing that than to make a sound decision. Should that mother stood there and allowed 8 girls to beat her daughter? No, not by any means. Is that okay?
I don't think people understand the stress. I mean, I didn't know this until I went to your website. 26% of parents die within the first 10 years after experiencing the trauma of losing a child. That's epidemic kind of numbers, especially in, like, in Chicago. That's an epidemic.
It is. It's really an epidemic. I can tell you, the mother of my daughter's friend died right after trials. She literally died of a broken heart. And I know how easy that can happen, because the pain is so unbearable. It's so unbearable. You don't know what to do. It's not a natural order that a parent buries a child.
Sylvia, my heart goes out to you, especially this weekend, and to all of the mothers in your situation. Thank you so much for being on. I'd like to further a conversation, and Bob, the same with you. I know we're probably not the press that would be the most helpful, but we want to be as helpful as we can be. And I have a feeling you're not going to get mainstream press to really expose what you're doing, but I think it's really important, and we'd like to help in any way that we possibly can. Please, let's continue this conversation. If you would like to find out more about this, or you would like to make a donation and help the people who are actually trying to heal, you can go to the woodsoncenter.org. That's woodsoncenter.org, or voicesofblackmothersunited.com. What an appropriate way to spend Mother's Day weekend. Voices of Black Mothers United.com.